in a cold, far away world. Hi, this is Stan Bush, and you're listening to the GeekCast Radio Network. Fighting the war for Cybertron, till all are one.
This is Optimus Prime, and you're listening to All Things Transformers with Steve Megatron and TFG1 Mike. Transform and roll out!
You're listening to All Things Transformers, Episode 48, recorded Thursday, June 17th, 2010. Transformers!
Welcome to All Things Transformers, Episode 48, and joining me this week is, unlike normally, we have more than just TFG1 Mike. We have
Dead Air.
Michael.
You forgot my name, didn't you?
No, I was going.
Oh, you want me to introduce myself?
Well, yeah. And also we have a special guest this week. We have Spada from the now-defunct TF Wire.
Defunct, the greatest two words of the English language.
Yes. That would be the lack of funk. I didn't know the TF Wire's defunct. When I was just listening to that. When did I unsubscribe? I accidentally unsubscribed because iTunes completely mucked up my entire podcast list.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, we're still getting listeners.
See, you know,
well, the old stuff is still up. Yeah.
Yeah. They ended it at episode 200.
Yeah, and it was actually a pretty crappy episode, if I do say so myself.
Shoot high, right?
Yeah. Shoot high. Really, the reason we ended it was because it just got to the point where we didn't have a lot of free time anymore, and when we ended it, there was no news happening.
Yeah.
I mean, there was nothing happening. I mean, we had several weeks of zero news.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I can see that. The show that I'm on, The Beast Unleashed, we actually don't do a whole lot in the way of news. So we don't so much suffer from that.
Well, it's a cartoon review show, so there'd be a difference. It's not an actual news podcast. And I honestly am, because there's so many out there already, regardless if Transformers or gaming, it doesn't matter what fandom you use, there's so many out there that do it so much better. I honestly don't care to do news podcasts whatsoever. I just don't. I mean, we do ATTF, and we select some stories from TFW that we want to comment on, but it's not like a hard-hitting news thing. I don't know.
Probably better that way.
Yeah, probably better that way.
I like having a niche to fill.
Well, it is convention season, and Michael is going to BotCon. Spader, are you going to BotCon as well?
No, I am not going to BotCon.
Okay.
I want to, but it never seems to work out.
Yeah, they do tend to rape you with the money situation there.
I feel the same way about E3.
Well, I would love to go to E3 at some point.
Isn't E3 just... Didn't they make that a couple of years ago into just press people?
Yes.
Did they?
Yeah.
Yes, and it was the year that they were in Santa Monica was the last year that they did non-press people, where they had public days.
Yeah, I think it was 2008. It was either 2008 or 2007.
Yeah, it was 2007 or 2008, because last year's – no, it was 2008, because last year's was the first proper, in quotes, return of E3.
Yeah.
And then this year has just been, from what I understand, nuts.
Well, I know that the Booth Babes are back, because for a while there they banned the Booth Babes.
That was for when they were in Santa Monica.
Oh, and I thought that since they had brought them back, that meant that there was public opening.
They brought them back, and they really kind of toned down what they can and can't do this year. But they were definitely back last year because there was they had the Booth Babes for Bayonetta and all those other strange games.
Yeah. It's mostly animated shows nowadays anyway, so yeah, that's true. Well, I guess my holy grail would have to be San Diego Comic-Con then, if I can't go to E3.
Yeah. That would be kind of cool to go to San Diego Comic-Con, if it even stays in San Diego. I heard at one point they were going to move it to L.A.
Oh, that would just be a huge cluster.
Well, yeah, it would be.
Yeah.
Plus, there's too much smog.
Well, no, I mean, I've been in L.A. traffic, and you put 10,000 people in the middle of L.A., and you're going to be in trouble.
The official numbers for E3 this year were just released, and it was something like 45,000 people attended E3.
Wow.
Mm.
Jeez.
Yeah, and you couldn't slap that down in the middle of downtown L.A. and not have Armageddon.
Yeah. No. I guess the first news item I'm going to bring up is, and this Michael can really comment on this, of course it's not happening until July, I think, Transformers 3 to shut down Michigan Avenue for 3.5 days. Wow, is Chicago's business center just going to die?
It's going to take a huge dump, yes it is.
Yeah,
they're only going to close it, they're going to close down LaSalle. Which is right in the middle of the banking district. It is the banking district, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to shut that down for 3 days. I think like 4 to 8 hours a day for 3 days. And then Michigan Avenue, which is business district, not so much business, but commercial, the commercial district, the Magnificent Mile, they're going to shut that down for a few days.
Yeah. According...
I can't imagine what that's going to be like. I mean, Michigan Avenue is like, four lanes straight across, and it's always packed.
The story here at TFW says, Chicago's Michigan Avenue, also known as Magnificent Mile, will be closed to foot and vehicular traffic on July 15th at 8 p.m. through July 19th at 5 a.m. So they're closing it for 3.5 straight days. It's not like certain hours.
Oh, you're kidding.
They're closing it for 3.5 straight days.
Holy How are crap. People going to get to work?
I don't know.
These are office buildings all around there. I used to work in one. I still have friends that work in those office buildings. I'm going to see if I can't get someone to take some video for me.
Yeah.
You're probably not allowed to go to work that day.
Yeah, that would suck. Yeah.
Here, we'll pay you to take the day off.
I totally would help.
Not only Chicago, but Bay has just obtained the rights to film on the National Mall in D.C.,
Mm. That's huge. And you know how Bay is about his airplanes.
Explosions.
How are they going to put airplanes around the National Mall? They haven't done that in the last 10 years.
Well,
once or twice on accident, maybe.
It's going to be extremely difficult because that's closed airspace.
Yeah, exactly.
That is not airspace that you are easily able to fly in.
The president's not even allowed to fly there.
The only only vehicle that is allowed to fly in that airspace is Marine One, which is the president's helicopter.
Right, right. There was a huge blow up. I want to say it wasn't long after Obama was elected, but Obama's press secretary did a flyby photo shoot of the National Mall, and there was an airplane buzzing around. And nobody really knew what was going on, and there was a huge outcry because they don't know is that terrorists or what the hell is another guy in a Cessna floating around for publicity, what's going on here? And it turned out it was the publicist who had contracted this plane to fly around and take pictures.
Yeah. It's a publicity stunt! Run!
Exactly. But no, I mean, nobody had any clue, and a lot of people freaked out. And I'm assuming somebody got fired over that. But I'm not for sure, but it's a huge deal to fly a plane over that. And we all know that Michael Bay is going to want to fly really low. He's going to want a helicopter or an airplane to buzz the Washington Monument or something.
And he is going to want to blow something up.
In front of the White House. There.
And if he – like, Independence Day was one thing because it was a model.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry. I find it very disturbing, the thought of the movie Transformers tromping through the National Mall.
Well, they said it's going to be a car race. And a car race to me kind of means, well, maybe it's just going to be cars. I can't imagine them not transforming at some point.
Now, there are roads that parallel the National Mall. And there are a few roads that snake through the ends on either end.
Yeah.
But there aren't any roads that go through the National Mall. Like, they don't go straight through.
there's a buttload of sidewalk, though.
Oh, there is a ton of sidewalk.
Yeah, I mean, there's literally a parade route on either side of the reflection pond. So there's plenty of room.
Big.
Exactly.
It's not that big. Now, there are large sections of, like, grassy areas. But, I'm from this area. I am from the D.C. Baltimore area. I really don't want to see Optimus Prime driving through the National Mall. It it just rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, I think a lot of that they're probably just going to have to fake, but... Yeah, the last time I was there, it was wintertime, and apparently it was like a rare snowfall or something, and everybody had freaked out. And I took the metro there, so I actually didn't see the roads.
Oh, snow in the more than 5 inches in the Baltimore-Washington area will pretty much shut both cities down.
Yeah, no, it was probably about 2.5 inches. The only people there were the ones at the skating rink. And you know, I walked around the mall, and I looked up at the Washington Monument, and I saw the lights, and I had some hot chocolate at the skating rink, and then I took the metro back to my hotel.
Yeah, that was
nice. Yeah, it was nice, but I mean, there was no shortage of walking space. There was. I mean,
no,
I'm sure they could.
There really isn't.
Yeah, I'm sure they could put a car in there somewhere.
No driving down the sidewalk, damn it.
Yeah. But no, I could see them, you know, somehow doing some type of car race there, or, you know, if you want to completely CGI it and tie in some modeling, you could have, you know, somebody run into the Sears Tower to run into the Washington Monument, and knock it down. We don't need that Sears Tower. Knock it down too.
Devastator's going to show up again. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh man.
He and his giant balls.
No, those got railed off.
One of those, one of those dog scoots where he gets on his butt and scoots his balls across the floor right into the White House.
I just thought of something completely tasteless. What if the Stunticons are in this movie, and the four limb guys decide to drive up the sides of the Washington Monument?
Oh no.
You know what? They have Motormaster. You've seen the pictures of the Motormaster. He's going to be at BotCon. And
I haven't actually seen the pictures.
Oh, no. It's badass. It's a semi-truck. It's painted black. It's got purple flames along the rear fenders. And on the side, it's got written in, you know, kind of like how Barricade had to enslave and punish. It says these wheels are made for crushing. It's pretty cool. It's a cool looking semi truck. And
I've got the YouTube video going up. Oh,
okay.
Oh yeah. My. Oh wow. It's
cool.
It's a cab over truck like the original Prime was too.
It is. Yeah.
That is pretty badass.
It's got the windows up on top of the cab. Just like Motormaster. It's very cool. and I would I'd like to I'm going to enjoy seeing it, but the fact that it exists makes me wonder if it's going to show up in the movie. And if he's there, are the rest of the Sonicons going to be in the movie? Because you know the Autobots are going to have a combiner next time. Because the Decepticons have one.
Possibly. Well, it all depends on how well they could sell it. Because I don't think the Devastator figure sold all that well.
No. Sadly, I haven't bought one yet. I'm waiting for it to come down to $20 on clearance.
You mean the big one?
The big one, yeah. Oh, I bought the Legends, yeah. I like the Legends. I just don't see the point in buying that big-ass box set if, it doesn't really transform into anything.
So what do you think about Motor Master, Steve? Steve?
Steve has dropped.
No, he hasn't. He's falling asleep, probably.
Ooh.
You. What do you think of Motor Master potentially? It's going to be a BotCon, but what do you think of its possibility of being in the film?
I could see it being in there, but at the same time, I don't think he'll do another combiner.
Let's hope not, because the first one really sucked.
Oh, I'd like to see some combiner-on-combiner action.
Actually, I would like to see, since they're bringing in Shockwave, have the Dinobots.
Nah.
Because they seem to be the ones that battle with Shockwave quite often in various forms of the fiction.
That makes sense, yeah. I don't so much see it happening, because Bay basically said long ago that he hates Dinobots and they won't be in his movies.
Oh, nothing says they couldn't have Grimlock, at least. Or Ultra Magnus or somebody.
Oh, I would be interested to see maybe some of the characters they introduced in the 1986 movie showing up, and have Mike bitch and whine because there's a Bay former Springer floating around. And
oh, God.
That'd be hilarious.
Triple changers, fucking things like that. Springer steals RC away.
Oh, God. Well, hell, he can have those RCs. I don't care about that, hell.
The two remaining RC sisters, the one that didn't get killed off, he steals them away from Rodimus. Sorry, Rodimus, you get no love.
Oh, I hope to God Bay never uses Rodimus Prime in the films.
I hope they never even hit that part of the Transformer lore of Galvatron, Rodimus, and Unicron. I hope they just keep that right out of live action.
I was actually hoping for Unicron.
Do you know how ridiculous that would look in the live action?
You know how ridiculous the second movie was? It couldn't get much worse.
Yes, I'm sure
don't
it could.
Say look that.
Fantastic Four 2.
Michael Bay says, all right, we have explosions and a hot chick, but no plot. Is that okay?
But she turns into Unicron.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
it's a hot chick that's a pretender that turns into a planet-eating monster. Oh, my God.
And then that's the end of Sam in the first 10 minutes.
Talk about a giant clitoris.
Oh, my. Oh, he went there.
Yes, I did.
And Michael Bay has officially put. And Michael Bay has officially pushed back feminism to the 1960s.
Thus, ultimately raping everyone's childhood.
Yes.
Yes.
It's like the clitoris comes
in
a giant jaw, and then the labia minor wrap around in the claws and begin chewing into Washington, D.C. And there's explosions!
They really are going to bite Lincoln's head off.
Tastes like copper.
Like a big penny.
And this is me walking out of the theater.
That was a Nickelback I sure didn't need back.
Oh, stop. I will pay you to stop.
Actually, if you want to pay me to stop, you can get me 2 RCs at BotCon. Anyway.
Oh, you know what? I was just at Toys R Us the other day. They had RCs up on the shelf. I'm telling you, go to Toys R Us. They will be there.
Yeah, right. The Toys R Us here sucks. They just do. What do you guys think of the box art for Counterpunch?
I thought it was cool that they had his headlights turned on. But I don't know. I mean, for a character whose main deal is he's two different cars and two different robots, they just put one car on the hood. Robots.
No, well, he's only one car, two different robot forms.
Right. No, exactly. So, I mean, the fact that he's got, you know, three distinct forms, and they only put the car mode on the box, I found that a little disappointing.
Oh, they show their heads. One looks like Hotshot, the other looks like Soundwave.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I'll have to go back and look. I only glanced at it in thumbnail, so maybe I'll have to go back and see.
The only one thing that pisses me off about the TFCC figures, well, now that they're actually doing real figures and not, you know, 5 years for one dildo, is that the price to, first of all, the price to even be in the club. Second of all, the price if you're not in the club. Like, I don't mind paying $80, but it's got to be something that I actually really like want. It has to be like some sort of rare thing that I really want.
I think it's only $40 a year.
Well, for the club membership, but if you're a non-member, it's what is it, like $80 to buy the toy?
Right. So I mean, you pay half that to get into the club. You get your membership. You get your comic book once every 2 months.
Yeah.
And if you know if you're going to make it to BotCon, it's significantly cheaper.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, that was the only reason I was a member, because I went to BotCon every year, and the membership practically paid for itself.
Yeah. Have you been to any BotCon, Spada?
Unfortunately, no.
Okay, so that does it. We're hitching a ride in Michael's suitcases, because there's three out of the four hosts on this show have never been to a BotCon.
Yeah, what is wrong with you people?
You want to give us $1,200 a piece?
I was going to go in 2007, but my plan, you know, up to Providence, but it just fell through. I mean, it completely fell through.
Oh, that was a fantastic one, too.
And I really wanted to go, but it was like, okay, you know what? This year, I just got married, and I just bought a house.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no.
Yeah. See, that happened to me a couple of times where, oh, you're going to BotCon? No, I'm getting married. You know, oh, you're going to BotCon? No, I'm having a baby. You know, that type of thing. But back before Fun Publications got it, you know, it was significantly smaller and wasn't as expensive. And it was in, like, Fort Wayne, which is a couple hours away from my house.
And then there was one year where it was in Gary, Indiana, murder capital of the world.
No.
Yeah.
It's never been in Gary.
Wasn't there one year that it was?
It was in Ohio one year.
Oh.
Yeah, I missed the Ohio one.
Cincinnati, Ohio.
That was away.
Cincinnati. No, they had it in Chicago one year. And then that was before they switched to the Fun Pub. And then Fun Pub, the first year, they put it in Texas. And I think that was 2005.
Yeah.
Where is it this year?
Disney World, Florida.
Florida.
Okay.
Yeah, so that'll be cool.
Can't wait. Yeah, because the Providence, Rhode Island one was actually, that one was pretty close. The Cincinnati, Ohio one was close-ish. And then the other close one for me was Anaheim. And
well,
then this year at Disney.
He's in Baltimore.
Anaheim.
Oh, that's Florida.
No, I'm sorry.
Anaheim is in California, so.
I was thinking of Anaheim, Florida.
Oh, no.
Wrong Anaheim.
Yeah. No, the one in Cincinnati wasn't that far away. The one in, you know what? I'm thinking Kentucky, but no, that was Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Yeah, right over the river is Kentucky.
Yes. Unfortunately.
Yeah, well, there was one in Lexington.
Yeah, that was 06.
Yeah, that wasn't bad.
Yeah. I was almost going to go to that one, but again, the money issues. It's just,
Because for
you know, if you show up on a, you don't have to register. You can just show up on an open day, and it's like $10-$20 to get in.
Yeah, exactly. But if you're a Transformers fan, like all four of us are, you're gonna, and it's your first time going to something like that, you're gonna want the full experience. So you're going to have to pay close to $2,000 to get the full experience.
Yeah, you know, honestly, the first year I went was like 98, and I didn't buy anything. I just showed up and looked around and thought, well, this is really cool. Now, the next year I went, I spent probably about $300. But, I mean, that wasn't a full experience. It was just I showed up on a Saturday. I paid $20 to get in. I spent some money. I bought some Japanese car robot line. And I was all excited because it was like, look, it's new cars that transform into robots. And it wasn't until like the next year and the next year and the next year that I actually started registering and getting the exclusive toys.
Have you guys seen the images? I know Spade has seen them. Have you guys seen the images of Generations Deluxe Wave 3?
Generations Deluxe Wave 3.
The Soundwave and the Soundwave, Dark Mount, Megatron.
Oh, yeah.
What do you guys think of those?
I think that the photoshopped versions of the pre-production, you know, hand-painted versions, look really sweet, but they're not going to look like that in hand.
Yeah, that's what kind of sucks.
It was kind of like in, I want to say 07 or 08 at that BotCon, that was the first time they showed pictures of Cyclonus. And it was like, look, it's, you know, classic Cyclonus, and everybody shit themselves because he was so gorgeous. And when he finally came out, it was like, wait a minute, this isn't nearly as nice as what you said it was going to be. And that was because, you know, it just... I actually wrote a blog post about this on my site, and you know, you have this beautiful, you know, hand-painted pre-production version that's been all photoshopped to look shiny and pretty, and then you know, it's a far cry from what you actually see. Once it goes through the approval processes at Hasbro, they say, "Oh, we can't add this paint application. We can't use this paint application." And oh, this is the silver. This is too expensive. We're going to have to use a dull metal or a dull gray. You know, not even a gunmetal gray, more like a brown almost, you know? So you get it in hand. Sure, it's a nice mold, and it's a nice figure as well articulated, and it looks like G1 Cyclonus, but it's not what they promised us a year and a half earlier at BotCon.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the Soundwave, and, I mean, yeah, I get the point. It's not going to look all shiny like this, but I am so glad they put in the homages to G1 with the cassette deck looking thing, his little shoulder thing. I don't know if it's a missile launcher, whatever the hell it is, and his gun. I mean, it looks like they just ripped it right off the cassette deck, the old G1.
Oh, it's going to be awesome. In fact, I was having kind of a Facebook conversation with Frenzy Rumble,
mm-hmm.
and he had said that you know, he was interested in making it bigger.
Yeah, he said something about making it leader class.
Yeah, well, expanding it in size, each piece individually in size by 150% with this plastic stuff called Hydrospan. And I had responded you know, but yeah, I said by the time that he gets done with it, the chest is going to open up and Ravage is going to jump out. So yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put it past the guy.
I like the Soundwave figure, but there are some things looking at the robot mode that just bug me. Something, if you look at his midsection, it just seems like that whole midsection is just empty. Or that his like waist is sitting on this extended post or something. I don't know what it's... I'm not sure what it is. I'm wondering if there's a mistransformation here. Because it just... It looks like something is missing. Maybe that's just me being, you know, weird.
No, I think that, you know, you're... Well, probably why you think that there's something missing in his waist is because look where his forklift-looking thing goes, right under the tape deck. He basically has the waist.
Right. That. I think he looks great, but there are just some little design choices that bug me.
If you look on his back, just below, like where his kidneys would be, you've got his tires.
Wheels. Yeah.
Wheels. Well, yeah. And I'm actually thinking there's a chunk that's shooting out on either side. It's possible those are supposed to fold in and fill in his midsection a little. And maybe
either that or the tires are actually connected to those pieces coming off his hips, and they're just folded up on his back, his lower back.
Yeah. Mm.
But besides Soundwave, the one that really was striking to me is actually Megatron.
Because I was just looking at him. Figure...
I'm sorry.
I was just looking at him. I was agreeing.
Oh. The pose they have him in, forget, you know, the paint apps, forget the shininess. The figure appears to be significantly more poseable than what we've seen prior. And that really makes the figure more appealing to me.
Yeah, he looks really good. I like the shoulders, the shoulder joints. I'm sure his hip joints are going to be, you know, the same way. But it looks
really
like his feet swivel.
Yes, that was what I was going to say. It
looks
like
he's going to be very poseable.
It looks like there's actually a poseability point in his feet.
Yeah.
What do you think, Steve?
I would have to say that I really like the Megatron, and I agree that he does look very poseable. I like the monster fusion cannon that's actually attached to his wrist. Mm. Even with the significantly different colors on the figure to previous Megatrons, I'd have to say he's a pretty nice mix with quite a bit of detail compared to what we've gotten since pre-Unicron trilogy.
Yeah. One of the things I'm very happy about with the War for Cybertron line, at least what we've seen so far with Optimus and Bumblebee, is they come in robot mode. So if I wanted to get Megatron, I would only have to get one of him, because honestly, that alt mode just does not impress me whatsoever.
Yeah, it kind of looks like a Ballista.
For Megatron?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not thrilled with the current, trend right now with Megatron of, okay, his alt mode is some kind of transportation vehicle for the cannon.
Yeah.
I'm not too thrilled with that.
I'm wondering...
Because I feel it really limits the designers, I feel.
Yeah, this alt mode for Megatron reminds me of Ravage's re-entry mode from Revenge of the Fallen. It honestly does.
Right.
I'm wondering, though, in the robot mode, if the gun... If the fusion cannon, if that's detachable.
I think it is, because if you look at the arms, those form the treads in vehicle mode.
Right.
So, just from what I can see here, I'm willing to bet it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't really see the sides, but I'm not seeing treads on the sides of this thing.
I am.
It looks to me like his legs wrap around the sides of it.
If you look at the very bottom, if you look at the gun and then just look a little bit left to the middle of the figure and all the way down, the treads are at his arms actually butterfly open to form the treads.
Mm.
There's that little bit of black at the very underside of the figure.
Right.
That's the treads.
Yeah. So the tread isn't really on the ground. They're laying flat.
And they're pointing at angles, because I don't know if you guys have played the demo, but all of the vehicles, if you played the leader class figure on the Decepticon, or leader class character on the Decepticon side, it's a hover tank. It's not a real tank with treads. It's just kind of this weird hover tank thing.
Yeah. A lot of people, I haven't played the demo, I probably won't. I don't know if Michael or Steve have.
No, I don't have the Xbox. So.
Yeah, I honestly could care less for multiplayer demos. If I ever get War for Cybertron, if I ever get a computer that can actually play it, or upgrade this computer that can actually will be able to play the game. I'm getting it for the story mode. I'm not getting it for multiplayer whatsoever, because that multiplayer thing just doesn't impress me at all.
I'm the same way. I'm very much a single-player guy. But I'm renting it. I have a Gamefly membership, so I'm definitely going to rent it and play through it.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a real problem with the Unreal 3 engine, which is, you know, Gears of War, Unreal Tournament, War for Cybertron. Everything's brown and gray.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm kind of old here. My eyes aren't that good anymore. And I have a hell of a time trying to discern, like, some of these multiplayer matches are pretty frantic. And it's like, yeah. Okay, where the hell am I?
Speaking of age, back on June 2nd, Michael had a birthday. He turned 37. And tomorrow, hopefully this episode will be up before tomorrow, the 18th, Steve's birthday is tomorrow, and he will be 2,433, I think.
24.
Yes, I know.
24?
Yeah, Steve is the youngest out of all of us.
It's just a pup.
Yeah. Woof. Do you guys have anything else you want to bring up? Are there any other news items that were really interesting or popped out at you guys?
Well, did you guys want to talk about Terror Dive and Tomahawk, the other two? The new molds that were shown?
Didn't somebody say Terror Dive could be a depth charge?
Look at his head. His face.
I could see that.
Yeah, I could see the resemblance.
I like the trident.
Yeah, the trident looks awesome.
I love the trident.
He just looks like a really cool figure. From what I've read, though, his alt mode was modeled after animated Starscream. So, you know, we might be looking at maybe a repaint with a new head a little bit farther down the road.
I was thinking he was modeled after one of the original G.I. Joe jets.
The Conquest?
Yeah.
Maybe. Oh, wait a minute. I thought, isn't animated Starscream modeled after the Conquest?
He's more modeled after a Valkyrie from Macross, except with specifically the VF-19 from the Macross series.
All right, I'll buy that, yeah.
Transforms the same damn way. Sorry, I'm really bitter about that.
Really? No, I like that figure.
Oh, I hate that figure. I'm sorry. Actually,
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I was gonna say, actually, digging through my closet. If you know about my closet, I got to clean it out full of Transformers. But I was cleaning it out and found an animated Starscream just in a box. And it's like, well, hell, I've already got one on the shelf. I guess I'm just going to have to leave this one in the box. So, yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, I got animated Starscream the same day that a Bandai redo of the Macross Valkyrie came out. The same day that I got that. And I'm like, they're the same damn figure.
Why did I pay $200 for this Bandai piece of crap? I shouldn't say that.
Actually,
the Bandai one is
actually staying together. My Starscream, I took him out of the box and his legs fell off.
he's utter crap. No, I've seen pictures of the what did they call him? It was kind of like the Macross Masterpiece Edition, where they came in like a book.
Yeah, Masterpiece. That's literally what they're called.
Oh, those are really expensive, but they look so good. I would so love to see, you know, like a G1 Jetfire repaint.
That would be nice.
We'd never see it because it's, you know, Bandai, but it still would be very cool.
Well, moving on, what do you guys think of the helicopter Tomahawk figure?
Is his name Tomahawk?
Yes. I think that he looks like a knockoff of Armada Cyclonus.
I was wondering if somebody was going to say that.
Oh.
It's kind of disturbing. He pretty much is the exact same figure.
Just not as bulky. It's more fleshed out.
Yeah. I'll buy that. Yeah. He looks kind of like somebody had taken the Armada Cyclonus and kind of Bayformered him.
I liked
Armada Cyclonus. I mean, he didn't have a whole lot of articulation, but I liked him.
Oh, who was the tank?
Demolisher. From Armada. Demolisher.
Yeah, he and Demolisher were my favorite figures from Armada.
Yeah. He got plenty of repaints.
And repaints, and repaints, and repaints.
I like repaints.
Sometimes they're okay.
Oh, I like them just for the sake of having them.
I know you guys talk about the Cyclonus thing, but this kind of ties in. I'm sorry. I'm a big fan of Shattered Glass, the BotCon part of it, but I cannot stand that they made a Shattered Glass Cyclonus. He's basically, and I know, I can't believe I'm saying this, and other Rodimus or Hot Rod fans are going to hate me for this. He's basically a Hot Rod Jet. That's all he is, as far as the color scheme. I agree with you,
but it's just, I don't know where they got that color scheme from. It's just like, okay, random.
And they renamed, Nightstick into Krunix or Kronix or whatever the hell its name is.
Yeah,
it's
Kronix.
It's the exact same damn thing.
Arbalest,
look, it's Unicron.
It's Unicron.
No, that was their name, Arbalest and Kronix.
Oh, yeah.
He says, Arbalest, look, it's Unicron.
Isn't it Orbalus?
I don't know. It's something like that.
I thought it was Arbalus.
No, it's Orbalus.
Orbalus, whatever.
Right? Orbalus, look, it's Unicron.
What are we going to do now with all these juicy fruits that we have in this bottle? My God, the medicine is spilling out everywhere. Help me clean the mess up. Where's the mop?
I just opened up a big can of Spam.
It's a mopping this poop deck, you moron.
It's like, yo, dog, I heard you like planets, so I put some planet in your transformer so you can plan it while you're transforming.
Oh.
Oh, shit, what are we going to do now?
That's one huge jawbreaker.
Oh, God.
It's the ghost of Orson Welles, give in shape.
Okay.
So, what do you guys think of Transformers in 3D?
No.
No.
No. My opinion of 3D in general has always been just say no to 3D.
I would say I'd have much more of an opinion if I didn't have to go to bed. But.
I just don't... And I don't know, Spada, if you want to continue on with this for the next 10 minutes, I know Michael has to get up early, so we may, I don't know, if you want to still continue, Michael, that's fine. But as far as Transformers in 3D, it's bad enough we saw Simmons' ass in IMAX. We don't need to see it in 3D.
Oh. Did not think of that.
Yes.
And then he turns around. I don't need to see that in 3D either, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll have ass so big that you'll see every detail of his crack of his ass.
Every bump.
I think that the problem with the fight scenes in the first movie and to a lesser extent the second movie is that things are so zoomed in and floating around and flying so quickly and it's all blurry. If it's in 3D, it's going to be just one big headache. You're not going to be able to see what's going on again, and this time you're not going to be able to see what's going on in 3D. So I just don't think it's going to help.
IMAX, yes. 3D, no.
Oh, IMAX, of course, yeah. But no.
No, we don't need to see Simmons' ass in 3D, in 3D or IMAX.
Well, maybe Simmons got killed when the railgun... No, he didn't, but...
Unfortunately, no.
He was crushed by a falling
He was crushed by a falling ice cream truck.
No, Devers Sears balls.
You know what the sad thing is?
What?
Simmons really was the best character in Revenge of the Fallen.
Out of the
He had the most life and development to him.
Yeah,
as far as humans.
Think about that for a second. The guy who is supposed to be the comic relief is a more developed character than the main characters.
Yeah, it's like, what do we know about Michaela? Honestly, what do we really need to know about Michaela?
She gets humped by Wheelie.
Exactly.
At least she's getting humped by Wheelie and not somebody else, and we're not going to make that joke anymore, so that's done. But honestly, I have now formed the opinion, and I will have this opinion no matter what Bay misinforms us on or actually gives us as far as information on the third film. If I go see it in theaters, that's if I go see it in theaters, I'm going to see it for hearing Peter Cullen voice Optimus Prime and seeing the actual fucking robots. I could give a shit less. You could put Pee-wee Herman, Barney Fife, and Balky from Perfect Strangers in the human roles, and I wouldn't care.
Please don't give him any more ideas.
Hey, come on now. I dropped the Wheelie joke, dude. Come on.
Could be worse. Right. Heard the Shat saying, "They're coming to get us."
Talk about
yes, replace John Voight with William Shatner. That'll go over real well.
That'd be hilarious.
Oh, well, who knows? Maybe we could have a human version of Galvatron with Spock.
Shatner go nuts and think he's Captain Kirk.
Oh, crap.
But
yeah. Anyway, do we want to continue with this, or do we want to just let Michael go and we'll just continue without him?
Well, I should probably get to bed as well.
Yes. Just want to bring up one of the reasons, other than the BotCon stuff, one of the reasons why we're doing this interview or this episode is because I interviewed Jim Sorensen, who is a co-author of AllSpark Almanac 1 and 2, which I think is coming out at the end of June. He didn't give me an exact release date. And I also talked with Stan Bush, who his new album, Dream the Dream, is coming out in late August. So I guess you'll hear those next, and Megatron, close the show.
Excellent. Yes.
He says that every time.
Yeah, I know. I was hoping for some Barney jokes, but no, that didn't happen.
Damn.
Yeah, I'm not getting into that in ATTF. We already screwed people's minds at TVU.
That's right.
I'll have to play the clip for Spada, though.
By the power of the rubber ducky.
Just quit your bitching, Barney, or I'll tighten up my ass cheeks and tear your dick off.
Oh, God.
Somehow we got into bestiality in one of the TVU episodes when Tigatron killed his tiger friend.
God. Okay, so this has been All Things Transformers. We're out of here, folks. We'll continue this later. See ya. Up next is the Jim Sorensen interview, then Stan Bush.
Take it like a real bot. Transformers. Golden meets the eye. Transformers. Robots in disguise. Autobots wage their battle to destroy.
You might feel different when the slime they spew out melts through your armor plating and rots your circuits from the inside.
Really?
I've had some experience with organics, and believe me, nothing good can come from contact with them. Isn't that right, Optimus?
Hey everyone, this is Mike TFG and Blanchard, and I have the great privilege to talk with Jim Sorensen, co-author of Transformers Animated, the AllSpark Almanac Volumes 1 and 2. Hey Jim, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Thanks for being on the show. So what have you been up to lately?
Lately as in since finishing up the Almanac 2?
Yeah.
Well, I've been laying the groundwork for whatever my next project's going to be. Nothing I can talk about yet because we don't have anything signed yet, but I'm trying to get my my fingers onto some interesting properties. Hopefully I'll have something I can talk about in the not too distant future, a few months maybe.
Cool. Are you going, and how excited are you for BotCon?
I am definitely going to BotCon. I go every year. I don't think that's not quite true. I've missed one since 97, but I have a good excuse. I was in Japan that year. So
Which one did you miss?
2000.
Oh, okay.
I missed BotCon 2000, although or maybe it was 99, actually. Maybe it was whichever one had Jim Burns. I think that's his name, the fellow who plays Inferno.
Inferno, yeah, I'm not sure which that was.
That might be 99, but I did go to BotCon Japan 98, so my count is about right.
What was your favorite part about working on AllSpark Almanac 2?
Well, I'd have to say getting the chance to work more closely with Hasbro this time out. The first three books I've done have focused on more the cartoon side. The two ARC books were for Generation 1 cartoon models, so I got to work with folks like Bob Budiansky and Flora Derry and folks like that, which was pretty neat. And then the first AllSpark Almanac, I got to work closely with Matt Youngberg, a little bit more with him this time, but I got to work with him and Derek Wyatt and Marty Eisenberg. But this time I actually got the chance to work closely with some of the Hasbro folks, like Eric Cybernelli. So that was really neat for me to see that side of the house.
Besides season 3 of Animated, what other goodies can we expect in the book?
Well, as you might have gathered from the previous question, the answer to the previous question.
The toys.
Yes. There'll be coverage of the toy line. I know there is at least one fellow on one of the message boards who said he was very disappointed with the AllSpark Almanac because we didn't go into the toy line. So maybe he can revise and revisit his opinion, at least as far as the second volume goes. And the nice thing, I think, about the AllSpark Almanac 2 is it very much bookends what we start in 1. It's a very similar format. It'll look great on the shelves together, and you put them together, and it really tells the entire story of Animated, soup to nuts, seasons 1, 2, and 3, the cartoon side of things, the toy side of things, and then with the interstitial, we get to explore other areas, like we get to go into merchandising a bit. And the last one, we covered the UK Titan Comics, and this one, we cover the video game. We go into a little bit of detail on. We go a little bit behind the scenes there. So just about every aspect of the Animated gestalt is covered. I use gestalt in more of the psychological term and less the combiner term.
Yeah. I'm a huge Rodimus fanboy, and as we all know, Rodimus was in the cartoon for all of 8 minutes in season 3.
Yes, but he was played by Jed Nelson, so that's pretty awesome.
Yes, he was. How much coverage does he get in the book as far as not just the model sheets, but as far as like bio and story and all that?
Oh, he has a full bio, actually one of the longer ones. And, of course, the model sheets are all there, and they're some of the bigger ones. And then we have his toy, so his box art. So there's quite a bit of Rodimus in there. I don't think you'll be disappointed.
Very cool. Speaking of the bios, who writes whose bio this time around? Because I know last time you had, I think, was it Slipstream writing Blitzwing's bio or vice versa? You had different characters write different characters' bios, so who does that this time around?
Well, to go through all of them would be exhausting. I don't know if it would be all that much fun for your listeners, but most, you know, all of the main characters on both sides get to write at least one or two bios or examinations of other sort of concepts, backgrounds and culture and whatnot, just like we did in the first book or episode reports. And then many, almost all of the minor characters that had any sort of appreciable amount of screen time in the show get to write a bio. Not quite all of them. There's a couple of omissions. I don't think Rodimus actually gets to write anybody's bio, but there's a pretty wide range of voices represented in the bios.
Very cool. What are Universal Streams?
Universal Streams. What are they?
Yeah.
Well, in this is actually a concept that was invented by M. Cipher. You know, Greg, I think his name is pronounced Sepulak, but I'm not 100% sure on that, and Trent True. But Greg and Trent, who do a lot of the fiction for BotCon and for Fun Publications,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of, you know, the text stories that wind up on the Fun Publications website if you're a fan club member, and if you're not, you should be, assuming you're listening to this podcast, because they have some pretty excellent fiction. You get really pretty neat toys. Looking forward to the DevCon this year. But anyway, they invented this concept for their transtech stories in the Axiom Nexus city of classifying each of the major sort of continuity families, like Generation 1 or the Unicron Trilogy or Armada, into universal streams. And then they could further narrow those down by numbers and Greek letters to designate when they came out and what kind of medium they were. So you can sort of take the real world application of the fiction and map it into the fictional universe. And this is a concept that I was fortunate enough to play with a little bit in the first AllSpark Almanac, and in the second AllSpark Almanac we continue that trend. And in the first one we introduced a new one. They'd given us Tyrion, which is the movie, and Primax, which is for Generation 1, and Orex, which is for the Unicron Trilogy, and Malgus, which is for animated. So they'd given us four, and I get to give us... It wasn't actually for me. I spoke to M. Cipher about it, and he told me that Quadwall is the one for the real world. So I got to introduce that in this book, and in the last book, in the AllSpark Almanac 1. And in 2, I get to keep playing with that concept. So you'll learn a few more universe stream designations. I think that the really hardcore fans, the fans that like that sort of thing, will be surprised and pleased by that.
Very, very cool. How many quote unquote special pages are there, like the Garbage-O's and or Venus?
It's a good question. In the first book, I think, don't quote me on this, but I think there was round about 15 or 20.
Mm-hmm.
And in this book, even though we had fewer episodes to cover, we only had the 13 episodes in season 3, and there weren't really any new comic stories for us to cover.
Mm-hmm.
We sort of used them in other parts of the book, so you see them in the culture section and some other ones. I think it's closer to about 25-ish. So it's, you know, even though we had fewer pages to play with or fewer episodes to play with, we actually got more of those. So if you liked the really weird stuff, like the scroll written by Vector Prime or the newspaper, the Detroit Power Press, there's a lot more of that in this book. And certainly I think Bill and I had a lot of fun coming up with some of those. And we actually had some pretty talented fans come up with some of those pages too. We had guy named Chris Vera, who posts under Veritas, I think. He did something for us, and David Willis, who posts as Walkie or It's Walkie and does the Short Pack comic, he did two pages for us, as it turns out, and or at least some of the graphics for him. So you'll I think you'll like what both of those guys did.
Awesome. Okay, as we all know, season 4 was slightly planned, but it never actually happened. Is there any material in the new book from season 4 at all?
Oh yeah, definitely. There's a lot of the book. At least 15 or so pages of the book are devoted to things that didn't actually happen.
Mm-hmm.
So not just season 4, but sort of other sort of ideas that might have happened or were discussed but didn't actually make it into the show or the brand will be covered. Mm. That definitely includes season 4. So you'll learn some new stuff that hasn't come out yet. And Hasbro and guys like Marty and Derek were really great in working with us and helping to get some of that out. And we didn't want to give everything away. You know, there's we get asked a lot, will you give the complete total secret of Sari's origin and what's up with there. And the answer to that is no. It's actually not something that that Bill and I know, and it's not something that we've pressed on. I'm sure if we really took out Derek or Marty and got them drunk, they'd tell us. But but it's not. I don't think this is the right venue for it, because I think it's a really good profiles book, but ultimately, the Elsewhere Almanac is basically a profiles book. It's a guidebook. So
yeah.
It's a lot of fun. I think there's a lot of humor in it. There's a lot of new information in it. There's a lot of things that you didn't already know that that Derek or Marty or Matt was or Eric was kind enough to share with us that were out there. And there's a lot of stuff that Bill and I just made up and got their blessings on. But something sort of that big, it's sort of one of the central mysteries that drives the show. I don't think it would be the same emotional impact to just have it written down on a page as something that's being told to us, or even worse, be out of universe and just say, again, I don't know the answer, but it turns out Sari is Megatron's daughter. It's like there wouldn't be any real kick to that. Whereas if they can do it in a comic book or in a BotCon story, or if Hasbro can do it up as a webisode or a direct-to-video movie, I don't know if any of these things are actually possible or feasible. Certainly, at least as far as I know, none of them are in the works. Not that I'd be in the loop about that, but it's always possible that we'll get something along the lines of these in the future. I would even say that if there's enough sort of fan interest and demand, it's likely, at least for things like a BotCon set of animated figures or an IDW miniseries. I think if the fans make their voice heard, that's something that might well happen. I know the creative people involved in the show would be very keen to do it. So I wouldn't want to rob them of that sort of climax.
Right, yeah. I think it's kind of sad that for some strange reason Hasbro will not put out Season 3 on DVD yet. I don't know why.
I don't really know one way or the other, but I wouldn't think that would be Hasbro. I would think that would be one of its licensees.
Well, I read on TFW at one point, tfw2005.com, that one of those Hasbro Q&As, and says the answer was, at this time, there are no plans to release Transformers Animated Season 3 on DVD. Now, whether it's Hasbro or Cartoon Network or the conjunction of the two, I don't know, but I think it's kind of sad that we don't have that DVD, regardless if the brand is kind of, I hate to say it, but dead.
If the brand was completely dead, they wouldn't have said yes to the Allspark Almanac 2. I can tell you, I don't know the specifics of what's going on, so all I could do is speculate, and I don't really want to do too much of that. But I can tell you that the team at Hasbro is really keen and enthusiastic for Animated. If they weren't, they wouldn't have let us do the Allspark Almanac 2, and they wouldn't have been as incredibly supportive and giving of their time. They certainly didn't have to do that, but they, Eric and Aaron were very involved in making this book, and it wouldn't be the same without them. So I have to assume it's not, there's not some sort of dark empire that wants to keep the DVDs away from you. I'm sure that Hasbro and the people there would. Well, again, like I said, I can't really speak.
Right. Well, like I said, the story said that on TFW, and this was reported a couple of months ago, that as of right now, back then, there were no plans for it to be released. So, there is a possibility that it would be released, but I just wish it was already.
Oh, yeah, I do too. Actually, it would have making the book a little easier. I wouldn't have had to... I had them all saved on TiVo.
Yeah.
It was smart. But, if I had it on disc, I would have been able to, pop them into my laptop and take them with me to the coffee shop and work there instead of having to sit in my living room. Which is the end of the world, but, yeah, it would have made my life a bit easier.
One of my co-hosts, Michael Wilson, he co-hosts the Beast Unleashed podcast, which is our Beast Wars Beast Machines review show, and Toycast, which is it originally was Transformers Toycast. We review Transformers toys over podcast form. His wife found, she's a school teacher, and she found, you know how schools have scholastic book fairs?
Mm-hmm.
And she found Transformers animated, the Allspark Almanac, and she got it for him, and he goes, oh, wow, this is great. This is just like this book, this big book I have right here, except it doesn't, it just has, the smaller version just has the character images. It doesn't have all the text.
Decepticons, humans, and culture, I believe. They cut out the episode guides, Detroit, and the settings chapters.
Will there be a Scholastic version for 2?
You know, I didn't know there was going to be a Scholastic version for 1. I found out about it when I got a big box from IDW full of, you know, I didn't know what was in there. I said, oh, that's weird. IDW sent me a box of something. And I open it up, and there's the... There's this Scholastic version. I'm like, wow. Actually, no, that's not quite true. Bill got the box and opened it. I was in New York at the time, so you know, Bill got, you know, his copies of it, and he's like, Jim, they sent me this, the Allspark Almanac, only it's tiny and there's pages cut out of it. I'm like, are you screwing with me? He goes, no, seriously. And he took a picture of it. But you know, he's the he's like the hardcore graphics guy. I'm more the writer guy.
Right.
So, you know, he could manipulate photos, so I was still, you know, slightly. Until he said, "No, I'm looking through it, and it says it's Scholastics." I said, "Oh, actually, that makes sense." So I don't know for sure if they'll do this. They might,
mm-hmm.
You know, but I don't really know what the decision making process is behind how one of those books gets made.
Yeah, what is the release date for Volume 2?
I don't know exactly, but I believe it's late June. So if I had to guess, I'd say probably June 30th, since it's going to be a Wednesday. But I don't know that for 100%.
Okay. You kind of talked about this at the beginning. I just have a couple more questions. I was going to say, what's next for you after Almanac 2?
Well, nothing I can specifically talk about, since there's nothing. Yeah, you know, I don't have any specific deal in place.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been investigating what other sort of aspects of the brand would be worth exploring, and I've been looking at some other brands too, so we'll see if anything comes of that. I'm sure that it won't just be my my blog. I'm sure that at some point in the future I'll be working on some other crazy guidebook or art book or making of or something.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of War for Cybertron?
You know, I'm not really a video game guy. I was when I was a kid. In fact, I remember being in college and playing Ultima 7. And it was actually an old game at the time. I think Ultima 8 had come out by the time I was doing this, but I was making my way through Ultima 7, and it was finals week, and I really needed to study for my finals, but I was just like addicted to this game. So I wound up doing something I almost never do, and I downloaded what the cheats were for the game, and I basically like fast-forwarded to the end of the game, and I beat the game just so I could work on my finals without having this, you know, quest hanging over my head. But you know, since then, I don't know, maybe I'm just getting old, but I just haven't kept up with the latest console. I have a Nintendo Wii, and I do the Wii Fit, like, all the time. Like, every day I'm on the Wii Fit. But other than that, I hardly ever play the modern games. So I have to say it looks, you know, the advertisements they've put out look really, really cool. I think it's great that they've gotten guys like Peter Cullen involved with the voice. It really helped to, you know, cement it as, you know, yes, this is a legitimate Optimus Prime. I think it's a neat avenue for exploration in terms of the scope of the game, the prequel to the Earth stuff. I like the Simon Furman's War Within and the things like Megatron Origin. I like when you go back to Cybertron and see early parts of the conflict, and it's great when they do it in modern times, because now there's this sense that you have to design the characters to have a Cybertronian mode. You know, I mean, in More Than Meets the Eye, you know, Soundwave turns into a lamppost, but he has the exact same robot character model, whatnot. Which you know, certainly was a step up from GoBots, which had them on Gobotron as police cars and motorcycles, which was really silly, but you know, the modern interpretations of Transformers, you know, from Beast Wars on, have always given them redesigned modes for both their robot and their vehicle modes. And I think the War Within designs are great. I think they look really cool, and the toys look really neat. But I'm probably not going to wind up getting the game. I have a buddy who's into it, so I'm sure I'll go over to his house and play it a little bit, and maybe it'll be the one that makes me decide to get the new PlayStation. But I'm skeptical. not of the quality of the game, just of my own desire to play video games.
Yeah, it's like, am I really going to spend 25 hours nonstop on this game?
Yeah, and of course, if you don't have the console, it's not like you're paying $50 for the game. It's like you're paying $250 for the game.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it's a nice, quote-unquote, I guess, new continuity. You know, like you said, going back to the pre-Earth stuff and having the war on Cybertron and just seeing that, I think it's great. I'm not a big fan of multiplayer. If I did get the game, I'd be getting it for the single player for the story modes just to see what the story is. I think that's pretty much all I have for you. So where can people interact with you on the web?
I am so overexposed, it's not even funny. I am all over the place. probably my blog is the easiest place to just straight interact with me. I usually post, you know, 2 to 4 times a week. I do reviews of comics. I've been going through the G1 Marvel run of Transformers about one issue a week for a while now. I'm up to the early Simon Furman stuff. And I also do some other stuff. Like on Tuesdays, I try and post new animation models from G1.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I've done, at this point, two and a quarter books or so. I did both the ARC and the ARC 2 and the collected version, which had a lot of extra material in it. But I still have tons and tons of models. So every Tuesday, or almost every Tuesday, I post some new models. I call them the ARC addendum. And they sort of use the aesthetic of the ARC. I use the branding there and the same fonts and whatnot. So it kind of looks like pages that could have been the ARC. And in fact, some of the early ones were actually literally pages that I made up for the ARC, and I just didn't have room for. But now mostly I'm making new ones. So I'm there. I post on Twitter as Sentinel Prime. But the trouble with that, or I don't know if it's the trouble, but the thing to remember there is I'm posting in character as Sentinel Prime.
Yeah.
I'm kind of a jerk, but an in character kind of jerk. So he's got a
stupid funeral.
Exactly. He's got a big ego, and he has a phobia towards it. I mean, Sentinel Prime, animated Sentinel Prime, and I do that on Formspring too, which I
he answers way too many Formspring questions. Oh my gosh.
Well, people keep asking them, I mean, I actually delete the ones that are really duplicative or just somebody chilling a YouTube video. But even with that, I'm up to almost 1,000 questions. I'll probably hit 1,000 questions tonight or tomorrow.
Wow.
So, it's fun for me. It's just this, like, creative exercise because of all the characters in animated that I got to write for, his voice was the easiest, came the most naturally. I've always gravitated towards the sort of egomaniac characters. I don't know what that says about me, but I have. I dressed up as Zap Brannigan for Halloween a few years back, so I dyed my hair blonde and everything. I'm walking around in what's effectively a skirt, so got some strange looks that Halloween. And I was in New York City, too, so I was, like, down in the village. In retrospect, I maybe was sending signals I didn't mean to be sending. But I love Zap Brannigan. Looking forward to the new Futurama in a couple of weeks, too. That'll be, I think, BotCon night, or the night after BotCon starts, the new Futurama will start. So
yeah.
I probably won't actually get to see that for a few days. And characters like Sentinel Prime and Captain Stern and whatnot.
Well, you could always have somebody build you a Sentinel Prime costume for the next Halloween.
Actually, one of the things I do on my blog is I've been reviewing the War of the Worlds TV series. Now, I don't know if anybody remembers that. In fact, I think maybe everybody who remembers that is already posting on my blog and commenting. But it was this syndicated television show from the late 80s. And theoretically, it's in continuity with the 1953 George Pal War of the Worlds movie. There's some hiccups there, but theoretically, they're the same continuity. And it wound up being about this guerrilla war between a small team of human scientists and these aliens in hiding that could take over human bodies. And it's really not all that good. It's kind of campy and fun and dark, but it's really cheesy, and even for the time it wasn't great. So now it just looks horribly dated, and all the actors look really 80s, and not in a good 80s way like Ashes to Ashes, which is all stylized 80s. If you like British cop dramas, Ashes to Ashes and Life on Mars are great, by the way. But it's sort of that bad 80s hair and not very self-aware 80s stuff. Mm-hmm. But I'm enjoying going through it. And the thing was, the basic premise, at least of the first season, was that the aliens didn't die from our bacteria. They went into hibernation. And in the 80s, they started to revive because the radiation from, like, nuclear testing and nuclear waste was starting to kill off some of that bacteria, and they were starting to wake up. So they would inhabit human bodies, and then they would have these, like, they'd be all pale because they're aliens, and they're getting killed by radiation poisoning. So they'd have open sores and rashes all over them, so they'd have to keep changing bodies. And, you know, the aliens from War of the Worlds had these, you know, three-pronged fingers and green arms, and they could access this arm from within their human host and get this third arm popping out of their chest. So the reason I'm bringing this up is because this Halloween costume that I've wanted to do for a while, and maybe I'll do it this year, is to be one of those War of the World aliens. So I'll put pale makeup on my face, and I'll give myself some radiation scars. That's something I can get at any costume shop, you know, really cheap.
And as long as you buy a chin prosthetic with it.
Well, if I wanted to be Sentinel Prime, but no. And these guys are pasty, weak-chinned aliens. They're not strong, powerful like Sentinel Prime. But the piece de resistance of the costume is going to be that I'm going to get a fake left arm and have it sort of dangling from my side, and then my actual left arm will be underneath my shirt, and I'll put on, you know, a green covering, and I'll have this third arm that can burst out. And no, the left arm wouldn't actually fool anybody if you looked, but you don't look at somebody to see if they have a fake arm. Just assume that their arm is their arm. So I'll actually have this third arm that comes out. So, and nobody will get it. I mean, I've explained it, so I suppose if I were to bump into anybody who listens to the podcast, they might get it. But, you know, certainly nobody on the street is going to get pale guy with sores and a third alien arm coming out of his stomach as anything. But it's my tribute to War of the Worlds. Last year I think I was Saul the Mole Man. That was a fun costume. That was a good one if you watched that show on Adult Swim. And
I very rarely watch Adult Swim, so I don't know. Maybe some of the listeners do, but I don't.
Saul the Mole Man was brilliant. I don't know if it's coming on DVD yet, but that was a parody of the Sid and Marty Krofft sort of live action shows. So they had these really, really horribly cheesy, but correctly horribly cheesy costumes and people walking around, and oh god, it was hilarious. I don't go for the really random Adult Swim stuff, but that was just spot on. If you ever watched Land of the Lost as a kid and watched it seriously, you would sort of appreciate poking fun at that style.
Oh, okay. Besides Sentinel, who is your other favorite character in animated?
There's a few really good ones. I tend to gravitate towards the characters that are sort of new to the series. I mean, I know Sentinel Prime existed beforehand, but he tended to be a cipher. He tended to be introduced, high, get killed, and then Optimus Prime could take up the mantle. Whereas here, he was this wonderful rival. He had a fleshed-out personality. He never died, which is a first for him. And I gravitated towards him, I think, because they helped. Well, because I do like Egomaniacs, and they flesh out the new characters. So I'd have to say, other characters that I like would probably be guys like Lockdown and Lugnut. Because even though I think some of the names had been used before, really those are new archetypes. And I obviously we've already seen it with Lockdown, that there's a, you know, that there's a G1 or there's a movie version of Lockdown coming out.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be at all surprised if characters like Lugnut and Bulkhead didn't get the same treatment. But I think the idea of your sort of Frankensteining himself monster like Lockdown taking pieces from his prey is really cool. And then Lugnut is just wonderfully loyal, you know, fanatically loyal. He's a zealot in the name of Megatron. And I guess you could probably find a few characters like that. I mean, I suppose Inferno from Beast Wars would probably count as being a character like that. But there aren't so many. And of course, Inferno from Beast Wars is pretty much insane, whereas Lugnut, Lugnut is, I think, basically all there. You know, aside from being very loyal to Megatron, he's basically intelligent, capable bot.
Yeah, Inferno had some faulty programming.
Yeah, well, Inferno is pretty crazy, but Lugnut, I think, less so. I mean, Blitzwing is the crazy one.
Yeah.
And actually, it's a great interpretation on him, too.
It is.
But yeah, I'd say Lugnut and Lockdown. I know you said other, but I'm giving you two.
That's fine.
Those two got a lot of fun. I like Bulkhead, too, you know, as a sort of new addition to the universe. But, you know, characters like Bumblebee and, Rodimus Prime and whatnot, they basically seem fairly similar to some earlier incarnations or at least earlier roles that have existed in Transformers. I mean, Bumblebee is less the everyman and more the youthful hotshot character, but, you know, it still feels more like a character we'd seen before.
Yeah.
Whereas those guys, not as much. And I really appreciate that. I like how fresh animated felt.
Oh yeah, it felt fresh, but it also felt like a G1 updating a little bit.
Yeah, they did a. It's because of the people involved, but yeah, they really did a great job of capturing what was important and what worked about the Generation 1 and earlier shows, and not earlier than G1, but other earlier Transformers shows,
mm-hmm.
like Beast Wars and whatnot, and taking what worked and making it feel like it fits in the same, I don't want to say universe, but the same, like you were exploring some of the same tropes, and yet it really did feel fresh and new. You know, they changed enough that it's hard to think of what they could have done better, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had a new aesthetic, they had a new time frame, you had Optimus Prime as the inexperienced commander. I mean, you've seen that a little bit before. Things like Optimus Primal, you know, was not the wise full statesman. So, but, you know, you put them all together, and it worked really well. And actually, there's some parts of the AllSpark Almanac 2 where I had gotten the chance to talk with Marty about why he made certain choices and what the thought process was behind some of those. And it'll explore why he made some of the specific choices he made that worked so well. So I think fans will like seeing behind the curtain, if I can Wizard of Oz for a bit. So this is a nice little Wizard of Oz visual reference joke sort of thing in the book that I think people will like.
Pay no attention to that big chin robot behind the curtain.
I don't think Sentinel's involved in that one, but yeah.
that's funny. All right, well, I would like to thank you, Jim, for joining me here, and I'd like to ask you to hold the line, and we'll be back after this.
The universal greeting. Bioweep, Grana, Weep, Neva. I am Rengar. I dare to be stupid.
This is Mike TFG and Blanchard with the Geekcast Radio Network and This Week in Geek. I have the great privilege to talk with Stan Bush, the master behind Transformers the Movie, the music for the most part. Hey, Stan, how are you?
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. I guess we're just going to jump right into it. How excited for BotCon are you?
Oh, tremendously excited. It's going to be fun. Yeah, getting ready to head out to Florida. That's where I grew up, so it'll be like going home.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't think of that. They are holding it in at Disney World this year. Wow. Huh.
Yeah.
Now, you've been the last, what, 2-3 years?
To BotCon?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, last year they had it here in L.A., and I was at that and actually performed with the band at Paramount Studios in the back lot there. And yeah, and so this year at the one in Orlando, I'm not going to perform with the band, but I'll be, you know, on hand for autographs and, you know, panels and so forth. And it'll be a blast to meet a lot of the fans. Plus, they're unveiling the new Transformers War for Cybertron game. Mm-hmm. So that'll be exciting.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny you mentioned that. What was it? I think it was Game Informer. I don't know if I don't regularly listen to their podcast, but there was a couple of news items about 6 months ago when news for the War for Cybertron video game was starting to come out, and they had this little music ditty in there, you know, part of the music, and I'm like, wait, that sounds like, and it was just an instrumental riff. It was like a 3-minute story instrumental riff. I'm like, wait, that sounds like something Stan would create. And I had asked you the last time I talked to you, I believe it was late last year, something. I don't know. It's been about 6 months since you and I have talked as far as one of these little records. And so what's the deal with Stan Bush and War for Cybertron?
Well, my song Till All Are One, Transformers theme, which is on the last album, the In This Life album. Mm-hmm. They're using that. The Till All Are One is going to be part of the game. It's I guess like the intro, and then the outro when it plays over the credits. So anyway, it's very exciting. I'm thrilled about that. The other cool thing is that they're using the touch for the ad campaign for the game. So all the GameStop stores across the country are playing the touch in a continuous loop, and there are also, you know, cable TV commercials as well as internet, you know, so there, and even theatrical commercials for the game using
the
touch.
Yeah, I've seen the GameStop ad on the internet. It's funny as all get out.
They make a joke about the song, I think.
Well, it's actually a funny joke because they have Shockwave make Soundwave transform into his former tape deck form, and it starts playing. And they're like, oh, why'd you pick this song?
That's so funny.
Yeah, it is actually. So the new album, I know you mentioned In This Life, but you have been working on a new album. Has it been completed yet?
Actually, we just finished. We mastered it, mixed and mastered it, and it's taken a year and a half, and it's coming out in August, so very excited about it. The title is Dream the Dream, and that's the title song, and then it has it's some of my best work. I was concerned for a long time about how am I gonna top In This Life, because that's been my you know, pretty much the pinnacle of my work, you know, and then but I think we've got another winner here. This is it came out to be a great album, so yeah.
And you mentioned that it will be released in August. There's no, like, actual date, though, set right yet.
Well, towards the end of August. August 27th is the official date that it comes out in Europe. And I'm not... And my deal with the European distributor, I have a license deal over there and also in Japan, but I'm not supposed to release it in the States before that. So it'll be towards the end of August when it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll be available at... You know, people can check stanbush.com. Oh, one of the things I should mention, too, I don't know if you recall, last year I did a sort of a totally different version of The Touch with a different melody, different music and everything else, but the same lyrics.
Yeah.
Called Sam's Theme.
Yeah.
Parentheses, The Touch. Anyway, that is on the album. That's on the new album, so it's kind of a really cool, like, bonus track thing, so...
Cool.
That'll be a little thing for the Transformers fans, because it didn't come out. I hadn't written yet the song yet when the In This Life album came out. So
yeah,
it'll be on the new one. So
very cool. Has there been any? So you said that the album is completed as far as the music, but what about as far as like design, like cover art and all that stuff? Has that been?
The cover art. I've seen that, and it's really cool. It's like this surreal picture with a there's like this outdoor scene with a girl on a couch draped with red, and there's like the birds and a clock, and it's like kind of an ominous sky, you know, dark sky thing, and it's just very cool because Dream the Dream being obviously a dream theme, you know, it all works. It's very cool looking cover. I'll have to send it to you sometime soon. It'll be posted on the website.
Very cool. So with you not performing at BotCon this year and just doing panels, will you try to like explore more of the convention that maybe you weren't able to the last couple of years because you were performing?
Yeah, I'd like to, actually. I do know that Activision is planning to do some kind of promotional events with me at BotCon and also probably Comic-Con as well. I'm planning to go down there to San Diego Comic-Con in July. So in addition to that, they always schedule me for a couple of panels and so forth, and of course there'll be a table where I'll be a lot of the time. But yeah, I'll definitely make the rounds because it's cool to be able to see and talk to everybody, and it'll be a blast.
Very cool. So after this, after the new album Dream a Dream, after that hits, you know, shelves and stores and all that, what's next for you? What's the next project you're going to work on?
After the new album comes out?
Yeah.
Well, there'll probably be some performing. The label in Europe will very likely bring me over there. I did shows in Europe like 3 years ago when the In This Life album came out. I did a little European mini tour and a couple of festivals and so forth. So I'll probably do that and be doing promotion here in the States as well. It'll be cool, yeah.
Awesome. Very awesome. All right, well, I would like to thank you for joining me here. I think this is going to wrap it up for us, and I guess we will be back after this. This is Mike TFG and Blanchard with Stan Bush. See you next time, folks.
Okay, take care, Mike.
Long before leads them on to I wish to speak to my lawyer.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.